You keep saying whenever you want to start, then keep saying things. I don't think you really want me to start.
It's okay, go ahead.
So this is, do you really want me to start? Okay. All right, I'll start then. Okay.
You can do that.
I don't think you do. I don't think you want me to start. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon. I'm Ian Boothby.
And I'm David Edrick.
We are using new equipment today, so if we sound strange, it's probably not because of the equipment, it's probably just because we sound strange. We've replaced some of our cords with wet pieces of string.
Well, that's what we were told.
Yeah, we're told that these should conduct sound.
Yes.
I believe...
As long as you have a tin can on either end, that is perfect.
Did you do that as a kid? Did you do the tin can?
No.
Really? I did.
Did it work?
I don't know, because you just heard the other person anyway.
Yeah,
how would you
that's
know?
Right. Well,
can you hear me? Of course I can. You're 5 feet away.
That's
how about 10 feet away? Still can totally hear you. Yeah. There's really no distance we could make a piece of string that would be far enough that I could not hear you anyway. And so, who knows? Who knows?
It's fine. It's, I'm sure it works.
Right.
Because vibrations travel down the string.
And then, of course, you think like... You get false learning out of that, right? Because you think, oh, this is how a phone works.
Yeah.
And, because the vibrations, they move at speed of sound. And you think like, oh, that's how things work. And the phone works at the speed of sound. And then you realize that can't work because I can talk from Vancouver to Halifax and speed of sound would not get, that does not make sense. And so this does not work, correct? Am I wrong? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but why? That's still the speed of sound.
No, it's not.
What is it? The speed of light?
No, speed of sound. No, speed of sound is way too slow. Speed of sound, if you were talking to someone in Halifax, would be like, how's it going? Okay, now we're going to wait a very long time for that. How's it going to get there?
Okay.
And then it's coming back. So it's not the speed of sound that that your voice is traveling across the country. No.
So
I don't exactly know
phones,
what it is, but it's not the speed of sound. I'll tell you that much. For sure.
It's the speed.
For sure.
Speed of electricity.
Yeah, sure. Let's go speed of electricity. This is something I should have researched before coming
on
here.
Yeah, before you said that. But no, when you say that, it does make sense now. Like, but how would in the past, like if you're talking to someone
a Because a plane goes faster than the speed of sound.
Yeah.
But a plane can't race your voice across the country and beat it back. Can't do it, obviously. And this is obvious. You guys all know this. This is just common knowledge. We're coming across now as two real dumb guys who have just realized how phones don't work.
You're right. I actually don't know anything about phones. I think we were talking that I live in a community with a telephone museum.
Right.
But the embarrassing part is I don't know how it works. I have seen them working. I've seen the switching, the relay system, like the breakers and things flipping around to connect you from phone to phone. But I have never taken the time to figure out what speed your voice travels at in the telephone lines.
All right. And this is what I always like doing. I've forgotten the name of the phone museum. What is it?
The Aldergrove Phone Museum?
Yeah, the name rings a bell. So that's what I like doing every time we do the daddest of all dad jokes. Folks, it's been a rough day. I apologize, but I'm trying my best. We're going to get through it. Everything's going to be great. We're going to do a show for you.
Okay.
We're going to be entertained.
Yes.
We're going to not be informed, because clearly we don't even know how phones work. We may try to get into magnets later, and then everything's going to get all oof. But then we're probably going to get some Juggalo listeners, so that's good. They're very popular. They're a group that might add to our listenership.
Why, they're big fans of magnets?
They have a thing there where they talk about the Insane Clown Posse magnets. How do they work? That's one of the things in their songs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, how do magnets work?
So by asking that question, we are immediately going to tap into that.
The Juggalo fan base constantly Googling stuff about magnet discussions and how they work, mostly getting X-Men fan groups,
sure,
which makes them angry.
Which
They're
is
just
the,
like, I'm not talking Magneto. Yeah, how do I eliminate Magneto from this?
Yeah, how do we have a movie without Magneto? That's the question I would like to ask. Where the one film where they don't go, hey, let's team up with Magneto. He betrayed us. So yeah, that'd be nice.
And as
I haven't seen X-Men Apocalypse.
You haven't seen it.
But what I'm assuming is
Have you read Scooby-Doo Apocalypse?
I have not.
That's a new comic that's out right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Set in the near future. Dealing with an apocalypse.
Hmm.
Not to be related with X-Men Apocalypse.
Not at all.
Or Apocalypse Now. Please continue.
Any of the things. Or Apocalypso.
Hmm.
So I haven't seen that film. But what I'm assuming is that they meet up with Magneto. Team up. He betrays them.
Nope.
What?
Nope. None of that happens.
Really?
Yep.
They turned a new page.
Yep.
For the first film ever.
Yep. You can sort of tell by the trailer kind of what goes on.
I don't know.
Okay.
I've seen the trailer, I think.
Yeah, the trailer basically says, Apocalypse, he always shows up, and he always gets four horsemen. And so he picks four horsemen, of which is...
Magneto can't ride a horse.
That's right. There are no horses. That'd be good. At least one of them should be a centaur, at least, right?
Yeah.
At least one.
You think that would be an X-Men ability?
Yeah.
To be born half human, half horse?
Sure.
Because that would be so easy for a mom to do.
There used to be...
We had to do a C-section. He's half horse.
Let's get nerdy for a second here.
Okay.
There used to be a comic book I liked that was based on a toy line called the Micronauts.
Okay. We've talked about this before.
We have talked about the Micronauts. I don't know if we've talked about...
We caused outrage by claiming it was a TV show.
Oh, that's correct.
But it was not.
But the best part about the Micronauts is many comics and toy lines ripped off Darth Vader, because who doesn't like Darth Vader? Who is a little bit of a ripoff of Darkseid.
That's right.
Created by Jack Kirby, to the point where... you never believe the power of the dark side. Oh, is it a lot like the power of dark side? Anyway, so when Star Wars got popular, he had a lot of Darth Vader-y villains. One of them was Baron Karza.
That's right.
Looked a lot like Darth Vader.
Sure did.
But could turn his bottom half into a horse.
That's true.
And so and
he was made with magnets. Speaking of magnets.
That's right. The toy was. The character in the comic could just go, I got to get somewhere fast.
Yeah.
I'm turning into a half horse. Off he goes. Good for him.
I had that character as a kid. I had that toy.
You had the Baron Karza toy?
I had the half horse, half human. He shot a weapon out of his chest. Shot a missile out of his chest.
In the comic,
his hands would come off.
He wouldn't do the Darth Vader choke you across the room with like his mind. He'd just throw his hand across the room, give you the old choke out.
Interestingly enough, his head was also detachable, as I remember it. Now, believe me when I tell you that I was in grade 6 when I played with these toys.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite a while ago, and my memory is a little faulty. I can't remember what I did last week, so... And I am not joking.
Probably played with those toys.
Last week?
Yeah, why not?
Because I don't have them anymore.
Oh, what happened to them? Mom threw them out?
Yeah.
Boo.
That's what happens with those
toys. Boo. Moms are the real villains, am I right?
My mom's...
Even Baron Karza looks at moms and goes, come on, I wouldn't do this, and I'm an evil half-horse.
I think my mom even, I think she even, what's the word I'm looking for now? She regrets throwing away my baby toys.
Why is that?
Well, she'd kept them. She kept them like from our move from Quitlin to Delta. But when they moved out of the house in Delta, they under my sister-in-law's authoritarian, strict fascist rule of throwing things out, which was everything gets thrown out. Everything was thrown out,
okay.
Including all my baby toys, including the most uncomfortable rabbit toy ever.
Emotionally uncomfortable or physically uncomfortable?
Physically uncomfortable.
It was made of what? What cat?
I don't know.
Dye?
It was made of some sort of a very short hair. It was bristly.
Okay.
And if you like hugged it as a child, it was actually kind of painful on your skin. And you're kind of like, why would people? Is this from the Victorian era?
To learn to grow up faster. Yeah.
Spare the rod, spoil the rabbit.
Yeah, you get a teddy bear that makes you feel uncomfortable, mm-hmm. so you wean yourself off it and get a job quicker.
I guess that's it.
Get out of the crib. Sure. Make the crib uncomfortable too. Throw some like sand in there. You know, fill it full of mosquitoes, and you're like, I'm gonna move on. Get a bed. This is no good.
Yeah. But all our Lego, everything all went in one giant.
Yeah, you should send her a little thing showing her how much Lego's worth now.
Is it? Yeah, I guess it is worth
it. Yeah, it is pretty good.
I don't know if our Lego was worth anything.
No, just generic Lego.
It's just bins of...
No, there's a lot of, on eBay, people just selling regular old-timey Lego.
Yeah.
Big buckets of it, and, you know, it's a nice fat cash there for that.
I know a fellow, and he collects Lego, and he had some interesting Lego. He had one thing he had was he had a Lego gun. That fired Lego blocks.
Right.
And it actually was like spring-loaded, and it fired them pretty good.
He was also talking about killing the Lego president.
That's right. And he...
Oblock Obama.
Oh, that's pretty good. He should have said Oblock Lego Obama.
Yeah, that would have been way better. Yo. Exactly.
That was way better. I thought
mine was... Oh, completely. Yeah, rolled
right off the tongue.
Bro, block... Obama, that's what it should have been.
What's it, say it again?
Bro block Obama. I can't say it twice. No one can say it twice. I say it a third time, he's going to come through the mirror we got here. Why are we recording this in the bathroom anyway with the lights off?
This sounds better.
This is freaky.
Sounds better.
Okay, go ahead.
You can really hear the sirens then. The gun, I guess it was made. It was a limited production because it was just like made and then they decided not to make it.
Right.
But he happened to have one. It was
made
neat.
Right before Kennedy was shot. And then they went, oh, that's
right.
Good.
No good. And then he had some that had electrical wiring inside them. So you could connect them together and plug it in and like have a lamp. You could go up and then it, so you could build the blocks together, one on top of each other, and make a, like he had made a whole dining or a whole living room set out of Duplo and Lego.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, are Duplo and Lego, are they friends now? Are they, is Duplo owned by Lego? Was there a
yes,
big takeover?
I believe they are. I believe that
were they Duplo, always?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought they were like rivals or something.
I don't think so. I think they're, Mega Bloks, I think, is like a rival to Duplo. But Duplo is actual Lego, I believe.
Brick-a-blocks that were if not at all bricks. They were like plastic, I don't know, you know, like spiky bits and you jammed it together, like the spikes all jammed together and you...
Okay, yeah, yeah, that's right, together. Yeah.
I remember like someone as a kid telling
terrible.
Me, they're just as good. No. It's like, no, they're not. no, these good. Are terrible. These are horrible.
You could, but they're quite common in classrooms because that's where the stuff like that went. My grandma had Lincoln Logs. And that's really going back a ways. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, you could build whatever you wanted as long as it was a log cabin.
Yep.
That was what you could do. Mm-hmm. It's different than Tinker Toys, where you could build whatever you wanted as long as it was a lollipop. Because she didn't have very many Tinker Toy pieces. So you could make like a lollipop with two handles.
Yeah.
Or a lollipop with one handle. That was your... My grandma wasn't really... like, it wasn't the place you went to play.
No.
My grandma's.
Did you have a Light Bright when you were a kid?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing how popular that was.
It was great.
For something. Was it great?
Sure.
Was it great?
Yeah.
It was all the fun of coloring by numbers. Okay. But with sharp plastic bits that would remain on the carpet and make your dad yell when he walked around his bare feet.
That's right.
He's so angry at all the sharp bits.
We
And then you'd use your spirograph with all your little pins, and those would go missing. And then you didn't know where they were, but you knew there'd be hell to pay one day in the near future.
If you ever saw our playroom when I was a kid, you would be shocked because it was like, it was empty. It had a toy chest on one end of it.
Yeah.
And you just walked in and it was sort of a double room. It was like, could have been two rooms, but my dad just made it into one big room because he finished the basement of our house, in our first house. And that room had nothing in it. Like, we had to clean up everything when we were done playing. We couldn't leave toys on the floor. So everything had to go back into their boxes and stuff and back on the shelves. So it always was like this big, giant, long, empty room. And it seemed, of course, really big because I was a little kid at that time. But yeah, had nothing. It had a TV, a black and white TV that came from upstairs, downstairs, where my parents got a color television. And on the other end of it, it had this kind of a toy trunk that my dad made. It was the most dangerous toy trunk of all time because he made this, it had like a shelf part, three-tier shelves. Then it had sort of a bin in the bottom that he put a hinged door on. That always fell on your fingers when you're looking for stuff. So you'd open it up, you'd look around inside, and it would either clonk you on the head or fall on your hand. So it was really, really dangerous.
Sounds like your dad didn't like you kids.
Taught us a lesson.
Don't trust dad.
Don't trust dad.
Build it yourself.
But yeah.
Add some Lego blocks.
When I think of that room, and I think how clean it was every day, I'm just, my mom now, must have had us under whip, like controlled by whips.
And now, Cats in the Cradle and the Silver Spoon. You're a parent of yourself.
Oh, my girls are so slobby.
Well, let me just ask you this. Did you do a big purge of their toys at any point? Have you done that? Like,
yes, we did.
This all has to go.
Yeah, not all the toys. It's been done in stages. There are still Barbie toys downstairs. But see, the problem with like Barbie toys is every year, every Christmas, they'll be like, you know, they want the new thing. So you get the Barbie plane. So then you have this big, giant fucking plane in your basement. Mm-hmm. And they're big. It's not small. It's Barbie, right? Barbie's a big doll. It's not like little Micronauts. They shouldn't have been thrown out because they're so small. But Barbies
are
ginormous.
The name of the Micronauts.
And then they get like the Barbie motorhome. Well, that thing's like 2 feet long. It's you know, a foot high. It's like this ginormous
unfolds.
Thing. Yeah, it unfolds and then it never gets folded back up.
Yeah, never doesn't have a bathroom
then,
in it though. I think that's a mistake of that motorhome.
They had a Barbie house.
Not having anywhere to poop.
They had a Barbie house and that thing, that was like 2 feet tall. A couple of feet wide. It was just, and it folded out, and it was just enormous. And then they had Barbie stables. It was an endless amount of stuff. These giant toys. Like they filled up everywhere.
Yeah.
So eventually,
it feels good on Christmas when you open it up and it's something big. That feels like you got
something. Sure, it does. That's
great.
Yeah,
it's nice.
I'm not saying they're wrong to get it, but what I'm saying is,
it wouldn't be they're wrong to get it because they didn't get it. They were given it by you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, any blame would be you. Right?
I'm not saying
it's not there to be the blame going like, Dad, I want
to
this.
To be honest with you, it was Santa Claus who brought it. So, you know. Ixnay. The girl's still, buying that story. Just saying. Better tell Mary not to listen to this episode.
Okay.
The thing is, though, that you reach an age where really you don't need the giant motorhome, train, plane, house, stable, whatever else we had.
You don't need a stable home.
No. Not when you're Barbie. It's never stable. And the girls, they love to buy the little Kelly dolls. They had so many Kelly dolls. with so many elaborate stories attached to them.
Now, is Kelly Barbie's friend? Is she in the Barbie?
Kelly is a little girl. And so I assume that she's Barbie's illegitimate daughter that she pretends is her granddaughter.
Okay.
Or pretends like is her, I shouldn't say that, pretends is her daughter, or her sister.
Did Barbie ever get back with Ken? I know there was a big breakup.
Was there a big breakup?
Yeah, there was a big breakup.
I really don't know.
Yeah.
Because see, I remember the name of one of the Barbies. She wasn't called Barbie. She had a great name, which was Constance Jalorathan. That was her name, which I think is a great name.
Right.
If I wrote a story, I would love to use that.
And then she went to Ellis Island, and they went, "Your name's Barbie now."
Yeah. That's
no, true. My family is the Jalorathans.
You can only have
one. No, you're Barbie now.
But you can only have one Barbie. If you had like three or four Barbie dolls, you could only have one Barbie. You can't have them all named Barbie. So they'd all get different names. Just like the Kelly dolls would all get different names.
Okay.
And also, they came in different types, different races.
Say religions.
Different. That's right. There was a Catholic one. There was a Jewish one. A
Protestant one.
Protestant one. Yeah. Yeah. And no, they were just, they were all kind of different places from around the world, these little dolls. And we would get them for them at Value Village. They would have them in bags.
Nice.
The girls would go in and they would sneakily open the bags and take out Kelly's from other collections and make the ultimate bag and then buy that. I never knew they did this. They told me this later on. I was like, oh, that's kind of cheating, but I don't blame you. Because it's kind of a ripoff. You have to buy all the stuff you don't want to get a couple of things you want. They just had an amazing amount of these things. Just so many.
I hope Value Village isn't listening to this podcast.
Yeah. And they just had an enormous, it's great backstory. I'd love to hear all the backstories and stuff. I just loved all that stuff. But after a while, they grew up and they stopped playing with them. When that happens, it's natural that some of your toys have to go. I don't think all of them.
Did you tell them when it happened? Or was it the thing that happened with me? And I think probably with you, where you came home and they were gone.
Yeah, they knew.
They knew it was coming?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's still some Barbie doll stuff downstairs.
Right.
But believe me when I tell you, they don't play with it. Like, it's going to go again.
They're young women now, yeah.
Like, I think it's fine for you to keep, like stuffies that you love when you're little. I think stuff like Barbie dolls and Barbie motorhomes and things that, you know, like they, you know, unless you have one from, like, 1950 or whatever time the first Barbies came out, right. I don't really see the point of collecting.
And that's just like a racist Barbie. She's just like trying to keep black people out of the cafeteria.
She's probably more a normal-shaped person than the current Barbie, the original Barbie.
Are you saying that only curvy people are racist?
What do you mean?
I was saying that she was racist.
Why would she be racist?
You weren't listening to what I just said.
No, I heard.
And then you went, no, but she's probably, is probably more realistic.
I was trying to gloss over.
You went in a very different direction.
Yeah,
you went in a very dark
place.
Yeah, wasn't it terrible when we used to have like whites and blacks drinking fountains? Yeah, but you know, her shape was more normal. What are we talking about?
But Barbie's from California. They didn't have that stuff there.
Okay.
It was more subtle.
How
racism.
Is Barbie from California? Have we set that always, up as reality?
I always assume that's where she came from. I don't know. She kind of looks like a Malibu Barbie. That's what I always think of her as.
Well, Malibu Barbie, I would assume, is from Malibu. Yeah. Yes, I will give you that.
Okay.
There's no New York Barbie?
I don't know. I don't remember that character.
Hmm.
There were quite a few characters. There was stuff like Wizard of Oz Barbie and all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just, that's Barbie fan fiction. Exactly.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's
I guess so. Yeah, she's in all the different. She's Catwoman. She's Wonder Woman. She's all the woman, all the things. Probably Gloria Steinem.
Yes.
She's Jane Fonda in Vietnam.
Sure.
She's talking down the war.
That's a lot of people to call a racist.
I don't know. Wonder Woman could be a racist. I've never really heard her speak up about anything on that line. When originally you saw Paradise Island, that was a pretty white island. Then they mixed it up later on.
Oh, is that right?
But it was originally pretty darn white, I'd say that island was.
Mm-hmm.
Then a lot of spankings.
Well, it would have been, if Paradise Island, wasn't it like supposed to be like a Greek place, like Grecian in origin or whatever?
I guess so. Yeah, they kind of follow the Greek way of doings. Yeah.
Is that right?
Back
it has
in the
like
day.
A lot of columns and...
A lot of columns.
They wore tunics.
Yep,
white
and
tunics
and rode kangaroos.
Okay, that doesn't seem very Greek.
No, but they did ride giant kangaroos.
Okay, well then forget
that's
it.
That's true.
Forget what
but
I was going with
as
that.
Time progressed, yeah, things got a little bit more diverse on Paradise Island.
I'm glad to hear that. It's all going to go the other way now, right?
Well, we'll see in the movie. The movie will come up and we'll see what it's like.
Are you looking forward to that?
I'm looking forward to seeing if there's giant kangaroos. I want to see that. I want to see her ride a kangaroo. That'd be pretty good. Am I looking forward to the Wonder Woman movie? Yeah, let's see what we're going to do with that. Let's see if they can have some fun with that.
Hmm.
That seems like it could be a fun concept. I also like that it's set in World War I. That seems to be...
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
But how is the film Batman v Superman big time fighting scene stuff movie. What's it called again?
Batman. Yeah, it's called Batman v Superman Big Time Fighting Stuff Movie Ultimate Edition. That's right. That's what it's called.
Thank you.
You got the name right, exactly. Many people don't get it right. They just contracted the Batman v Superman. Yeah. Yeah, you know, you got the full title.
Maybe I could have done that.
Absolutely.
But I
went, what is your question about the film and Wonder
Woman? Does it take place during World War One?
No, but they at some point during the movie, Bruce Wayne doing all his Batman research, which basically means looking at the research Lex Luthor's done.
Okay.
Ugh, do your own homework. Looks at a picture and it's her from World War One, and it's her with the guy. What's his name? Is it Chris Pine, who's Captain Kirk in the new Star Trek?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's there. Oh. You see him standing next to her. I guess he's Steve Trevor or some such.
Oh, so he'll be in the film as Steve Trevor.
Yeah.
That seems kind of unfair that all these people hogging all the different things.
Oh, stuff. All the different franchises?
That's the word I was looking for. Thank you.
Sure. But yeah, this one takes place in World War One. So, and I haven't seen any superhero movies set in World War One. I haven't seen a lot of action movies set in World War One. So let's see what's going to happen.
I do like that idea. But I'm just wondering now if she's flying an invisible biplane.
It would be pretty soon after the invention of the plane itself. Yeah, that'd be interesting. I wonder if maybe they got planes already on Paradise Island.
Well, isn't that part of her stuff that she flies an invisible jet?
It depends. Yeah, usually. Traditionally, let's say yes. And then there's another kind of thing in the comics where it's a thing that can almost turn into anything. It's just this invisible blob that could be whatever. It could be an invisible bike or something if you wanted. But yeah, it could also be an invisible plane. The invisible plane's a little weird. They had that. It worked in the TV show. But here's the problem. Wonder Woman can fly.
Yeah.
So
why is she in a...
Why she got... Yeah, exactly. That's the problem.
I think you made the joke that she's pretending to fly.
Yeah, she's just to piss off Batman. To make him think there's an invisible plane that he can't buy
because
he's got all the cool gadgets. But it's like if the Flash had a car.
Yeah.
And he would drive to crimes in it.
Really
and, then
fast
get,
car.
And then get out. Not as fast as him, though. And then he would get out of it and then start running around. Like, why did you drive here? Why don't you run? Yeah. It's like, I don't like running everywhere.
But you've seen what Wonder Woman wears. That's no. You're not going to stay warm flying around in that.
Mm.
So, Jet.
You know what? You might. It depends. Let's actually get into the physics of that. If you were flying very fast,
you would get very cold.
Well, would you? You'd be cold because you're up high. Mm-hmm. But then, if you have the air friction,
half naked.
Yeah, but if you have the air friction going and you're going very fast, wouldn't that warm you up?
I don't think so.
Really? So why wouldn't the air friction warm you up?
Oh, I don't think it's that much friction, is it?
Well, when you're falling through the atmosphere,
that's different.
Okay, what's the difference?
That's different.
How so?
Because you're going a lot faster.
Well, like, you don't know how. You're saying going
you're
a lot faster. How fast is she going?
Yeah, I don't think she's flying at like supersonic speed.
She's not flying at like the speed of a phone?
I don't think she's flying as fast as a phone.
At the speed of phone?
She's not flying at the speed of phone.
Do you know who can go at the speed of phone?
Who can go at the speed of phone?
Adam.
Phone.
The Adam. That used to be a thing that he would do where he would call someone up on the phone.
Yeah.
And then the person would answer.
Yeah.
He'd jump into the phone. And then he'd pop out of the other side and punch the guy in the face when he picked up the phone. That was a pretty good Adam trick.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it's nice.
But it seems like the sort of trick that once you do it, you just do it all the time. Because it's so efficient. Like, you never have to worry. Unless criminals stop answering the phone. You can just do it whenever.
Well, then you get call display, and it's like, what's it say? The Adam.
The Adam.
Like, don't pick it up. Why? I got to pick it up. I feel, I got punched in the face.
He could push Adam. That star whatever that blocks.
Star 67?
Star 67. Oh, it's sad that you know that. You should know that.
Why shouldn't I know that?
You should pretend that you don't know it. I don't know. I don't know how you block people from seeing your phone number. I have no idea how you do that. Why would I know that? That's what you say.
Oh, wait a second. Is it? No. Sorry.
Okay, that's good. Just leave it there.
This was something that bugged me, actually, was...
Okay.
I won't say the other number, but there's a number that you call... To check up on the person, and it's star 69. That's the number you really call.
That's a fine number people are having sex.
That's right. And you go like, oh, that's the number. You can call them right back. But there is another number that can block that number, and both have a charge attached to them that the phone company profits from.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, well, wait a second. So this is your safety feature, and then you have something that blocks the safety feature. So it's like you're getting it coming and going.
Yeah.
Like and to me, I always thought it was like the inventors of the club coming up with something that breaks the club.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you got to be on one side. You know, you can't do this. Boo to you. Boo, phone company.
Well, why not?
Yeah.
That's the essence of the phone company.
Now you do your Ernestine character and defend the phone company to me.
Ernestine.
Yeah.
I don't even remember. I don't even remember how she sounded. How did she sound?
She sounded. She sounded with a, you know, one. I'm not gonna do one ringy dingy, two ringy dingy.
But she had that kind of.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, just sure. Yeah, I'm sorry, sir. The phone company, sir. That bit.
Do you think that when she, the Lily Tomlin, did the laugh-in show, that she just
was clearly the best thing on it? Well, she knew it. And just went, fuck this. I'm the only one who's going to have a career after this. And she was right. Is that what you think?
Not just
aside
that,
from Goldie Hawn.
Here's the thing. I think that she just did all her bits in one shot. And they just had to sprinkle them throughout the year. And she never, like, intermingled with the cast. Like, cause I don't think she was part of, like, the thing where they were, like, looking through doors and stuff and saying jokes, was she?
That's a good question. Maybe. She was definitely, to me, the star of it. And it's interesting that of the people that were on Laugh-In, the two most successful people were clearly the women. And
they're clearly women. You're right.
Yeah, but they're clearly, well, they are clearly women, but also very different types of women.
Yes.
You know, one, the kind of, very dumb blonde character.
Yeah.
You know, and who was able to milk that for decades.
Mm.
That's amazing. You wouldn't think, like, if you're watching the cast of Laugh-In, who's going to be successful? Goldie Hawn. Mm-hmm. That's her. And then who else? Lily Tomlin, you might guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that's someone who, you know, real deep character work, going to Broadway, getting the Tonys, getting this, that, and the other. You know, some really interesting biting films. You know, but, yeah, couldn't be more different character-wise. And as far as I know, they've never worked together, even though they were on the same show back then. But it's interesting to me, like a sketch comedy show that was so popular, and the two most popular characters over time were both women.
I guess that's true. I mean, the rest of the cast, well, it's pretty much a dump. But
You'd have an Artie Johnson; he'd be popping up on
things. He's
good. But he would never like headline a movie. Leading a movie.
No, you bet your bippy, he would never be in a movie. But I think
Rowan and Martin were kind of done after that too, right? That was it.
Yeah.
And we're done with you guys.
Yeah.
There you are.
I'm sure they went to Las Vegas and had like a career as in nightclubs or whatever.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't even know really what they did. They just come out and do a little bit of banter, and one guy was sort of dumb, and the other guy was kind of, and the other guy was.
Yeah. I remember seeing them. This is quite a few years ago when they were doing like some old show, like marathon of older TV shows, and they played a Jerry Lewis show, a variety show or whatever, and they were guests on it. And they did a great thing with Jerry Lewis that I really enjoyed. And actually, it was quite funny. And it was that kind of thing. One guy dumb, one guy not believing the dumb guy. Kind of Abbott and Costello, basically. But more hip for the time period. But what I was going to say about Goldie Hawn, you can see why she... Like someone kind of doing a Marilyn Monroe for the 60s generation.
Mm-hmm.
That you can see being a success. What's her name again, the other actress?
Lily Tomlin.
Lily Tomlin. Boy, I'm out of it today. Sorry, everyone. Lily Tomlin.
You're confusing her with all her many characters.
That's
right.
I
understand the problem.
I was going to call her Ernestine. It's the only character I know.
Or Edith Ann.
Yes.
Another character for her.
That's right. The whole thing.
You're going to see all those characters in The Incredible Shrinking Woman, by the way, if you watch that movie.
Oh, is that right?
She puts almost all those characters in there.
The best movie that she did was The Late Show with Art Carney.
All of Me is pretty good, too.
That is a good film.
Yep.
That is a good film. But that's more of Steve Martin.
She's got some good bits in it.
He does a lot in that film. A lot of
Good physical business.
A lot of good
being
physical
Lily
business.
Tomlin.
That's right. Yeah. But The Late Show is a really good film. Yeah, really good. It's kind of it's one of those, it's like an action, it's a 70s action film. When you say that, you should immediately know when I say 70s action film, there's very little action in it.
Yep.
And the one that there's one action scene in the
usually
film.
Usually that's what a 70s action movie is.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting, right? Like in those days, it's like, wow, they had a car chase in that film. Right. So like nowadays, you have to have three or four car chases. Otherwise, forget it. You know, garbage. But in those days, one is good. But it's a good car chase. It's a really good scene.
Of course it's good. They put it all everything into that.
Yeah. It was written, I don't know, it was directed by Robert Benton, who also did Kramer versus Kramer.
You know, for car chases, and I don't know if I've mentioned this in a previous show, but I watched it again recently, and maybe I've mentioned it on a recent show. But like when it comes to car chases, an amazing car.
I'm going to disagree with you, but I know what you're going to say.
Blues Brothers.
Yeah, I don't like that one.
Well, you cannot like it, but it's still amazing.
It's too smashy. It's not...
Even the unsmashy parts,
where
they're just driving fast being chased, smash be damned. The smashing is amazing, but just the driving under bridges and whipping around, it's like, look, I get your French connection. That's great.
I think that's the best.
It's okay.
Why do you say that?
No, it's really good, but I think actually the Blues Brothers one is better. I think it's better. It's just a more exciting car chase.
No.
Let's watch them side by side.
Let's watch them side by side. I just disagree with you because the other one, it's just too much. Like, it's just, it's too much icing on the cake. The nice thing about the
When was the last time you saw it?
Many, many years. I will confess that.
Give it a watch again and see.
The thing I like about the French Connection car chase is that there's a couple things I like about it. One,
no one knew it was happening on the streets.
No one knew it was happening on the streets.
So everyone's in real fucking danger.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's Gene Hackman who's driving. It's not someone else.
It's, to me, that's a little bit like we let a live tiger on through New York. It's a very exciting scene.
It is.
Yeah, but people are really getting mauled. Yeah, it's exciting, though. Yeah, but... Okay, yeah.
I mean, people knew it was there were film cameras and stuff were set up. It's just that people, in those days, just could not close a whole street down. So you just went with what you had. So it is interesting. I think, to me, it's a great chase sequence just because to me, William...
No one's denying it's a great
William,
chase sequence.
William Friedkin does the best car chases. And I will say, you know, if you want to say Blues Brothers, I will say To Live and Die in L.A. is a great sequence. And even that terrible film, Jade...
Jade has that one scene.
It has that great car chase in it, and you're just like, okay.
And then we're like, well, can we get our money back yet? Has 20 minutes gone by? fuck. I guess we're watching the rest of Jade. Here we go. So he left NYPD Blue, huh? Oh, that was a bad choice, huh? Oh, well.
It was.
Let's hope he gets more work in the future.
He did.
He did. Hooray.
So we had to watch it. Boo.
You don't really have to watch it.
That's true. Now we were going to go somewhere interesting, and I think we didn't. No, I'm just joking. I have to watch the Blues Brother one, though, because I can't remember it. But what I
also
saw...
Also really good music.
I'm sure.
Yep. Good scenes.
They
like, it just...
Do they do Rubber Biscuit in that film?
No, they do not.
Oh, okay.
But it goes from, like, interesting scene to interesting scene.
It's got James Brown, and it's got Ella...
Yeah, Ray Charles, Aretha
Franklin.
Yeah,
that's what I'm going to say. Yeah.
Cab Calloway, nice big surreal scene with Cab Calloway. Yeah.
Is he the judge or the devil or something?
Nope.
Who is he?
Nope, he just helps them out.
Oh, okay.
And when they need to fill some time, I'll just tell you this scene. So it's him, you know, dressed as Cab Calloway, his normal Cab Calloway thing.
Big zoot suit.
And so, you know, everyone's like, Bray, start the show. Start the show. And he turns to the band and goes, we got to do something. And they're like, y'all know Minnie the Moocher? Like, yeah, we know Minnie the Butcher. All right. So he turns around. Now he's in a white tuxedo. And like they're all in white tuxedos.
Nice.
And everything is now an old timey. And then he does the big number and it's just fucking great.
Yeah.
And you watch it and you just go, it's so nice you got him. Well, he still could do it.
Yeah.
And he just like knocks it out of the park. And it's just so, yeah, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Share. It was just a nice tribute to all these musicians. And they all just nail it. Ray Charles is hilarious. Hilarious in it as the blind guy who's working in the music store, and someone goes to a kid goes to steal a guitar, and he just whips out a gun and like almost shoots him and like runs off, and it's just good stuff.
Yeah, it's a good film. It was also really good for the cocaine trade in North America.
I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was. And they were all mad mad at Paul Schaefer at the time.
Why?
Because he decided to do Gilda's New York show.
Oh, okay.
Instead of a gig they were going to do. And so they went, well, you're not in the movie. The end.
Oh.
And then later when they did the not so good Blues Brothers 2000, Paul was brought back in.
They made amends.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's good making amends, bringing me into Blues Brothers 2000. Which, again...
Come on, it's debacle.
Here's the thing about Blues Brothers 2000. Just watch the music. Now that you got fast-forwarding, go fast-forward to the musical numbers. The musical numbers are solid.
Yeah.
Don't watch anything else. Don't watch anything else.
So it's 2000. So it's Limp Bizkit. They play in it. Who else?
They just go to the Lilith Fair.
They go to Lilith Fair. So
yep, that's
Sarah
all.
McLachlan.
Yep.
Plays,
it's just Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah, and Limp Bizkit.
Yep, that's it.
And who else? Come on, help me here.
Spin Doctors.
Spin. Is that 2000? That seems like they're over by then.
I don't know.
Wasn't Two Princes like earlier than that?
Pocket Full of Kryptonite. I don't know when's that.
But same time.
Okay.
They had like one hit album. That was the end for this. They should have taken those two songs and put them with two albums. One song had Two Princes. One song had Pocket Full of Kryptonite. That would have done their career for them. But
yeah, I can't help you.
They're not starting.
But I do want to ask you a question. Unless you've got other things to say on the various subjects.
I have. Of course I do.
Because we were talking about dumb characters. Like there's a smart guy and a dumb guy.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of business.
Yeah. Like you're the smart guy, I'm the dumb guy.
What?
That's our
So, okay. So not to, we don't have to like get into a full review of like the Ghostbusters film. But in the new Ghostbusters movie, you've seen that, right?
Yes, I went and saw it.
Okay. Now I've been.
I saw it in 3D IMAX.
All right. One of the things that.
Folks, it's not much 3D in that film.
Did you get the kind where it comes off the screen kind of business? Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, it was throwing up in your face pretty good. Mm. The rest of it, not so with the 3D.
That's what I mean. It wasn't that much stuff with 3D in it.
No, but it never is it? I guess. Any 3D movie I've seen, it's like, I guess.
Yeah.
I suppose right. The Millennium Falcon.
The only one,
around.
The best 3D film is Dread. That really uses the 3D well. When they do like the slow-mo stuff.
Yeah.
Where all the sparkles and the stuff is kind of sprinkling or things are happening in slow motion. They really use a 3D well. Oh,
nice.
In that sequence.
I did not see it in 3D. But
yes, you did. We saw it together.
Did I see it in 3D?
Yep. Yep.
Oh, man. Is that why?
Because it was only released in 3D. Weird. It was not available in any other format.
So here's a discussion I have seen repeated oft on the internet now, which is that the Ghostbusters movie is anti-men.
It's anti-men.
It's anti-men. I really dislike the anti-men elements. And to which I go, what elements are these? And, you know, I don't want to give one spoiler thing.
Okay,
about
well, I mean, is it the fact that they have a kind of a bimbo secretary played by a guy?
That is one of the things, is that, you know, you've got that, and Chris Gore, a film threat, has said there's not one redeemable male character in it, which makes it an anti-male film. I don't think you need to be redeemable in a comedy. I don't think that's necessary to make all your characters redeemable. But no. I don't think, like, Kevin is a negative character. I think he's... And, you know, you could just go, he's the dumb guy, and go, well, that's a thing in comedy.
Yeah.
The dumb guy.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's the dumb guy. I think he's the oblivious guy who lives in his own magical world where everything works out.
Yeah.
He's the guy who would be walking through a construction site and never get hit by anything and just walk from girder to girder without looking,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's him.
Okay.
You know, there's a scene, I will say this one thing, where just someone throws his sandwich away and he just holds up his hand again and someone throws the sandwich back into his hand.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, because he lives in a fucking magical world where that's where he is.
Yeah.
But their claim is there's not one redeemable male character and this makes it an anti-male movie.
I don't understand that. Okay.
Well, I don't think you understand it because it's not true. But
I'm just
like,
trying to think of... I enjoyed the film. I wasn't like
it's not
super
perfect.
Great.
Yeah,
it's
that's right. There's a lot of flaws, but I think the heart's in the right place. And again, I think seeing
everyone who makes a movie's heart is in the right place. No one says let's make the most terrible movie ever made.
I think there's some cynical people that probably make movies and go like, I just want to.
They made a movie called Ghostbusters. There's cynical people making.
But
that
movie. You know, I was there with my niece and my nephew, and he's, you know, he's 14 and she's 10, and to them it was just. Whoa! They loved it.
Yeah,
I was worried they wouldn't. I thought it would probably be too talky being a Paul Feig film.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It is pretty talky.
It is pretty talky, locked off camera. Don't care for that much. But, you know, I asked them at the end, you know, who are your favorite characters? My nephew was Patty. My niece was Abby. And it was like, yeah, they had favorite characters. They liked, you know, I thought, oh, what, don't you like whatever, Hosman or whatever her name is? You know, I liked her the
Holtzman.
Best. Holtzman, yeah. She had that nice action scene and stuff. I was like, yeah, good. But I went like, no, this is for them. This is their style of thing. This works for them.
Yeah.
And they
it's like a video game, so of course they like it.
Yeah, and I think like if they watched the original Ghostbusters, there'd be a lot of things in there that I'd kind of have to be going, oh boy, okay, oh geez, here we go, boy. I mean, they might still like it, but you know, blowjob ghost onwards. It's a tough one sometimes.
Yeah. The '80s, hard time. Hard time for everyone.
What's your thoughts, Mr. Dedrick?
Well,
anti-man?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't...
As a man, did you feel...
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was reading an article in the paper this morning, and it was saying that in Canada, 3/4 of suicides are men in Canada, which is a pretty high average, you think. And one of the things they said, one of the reasons that they were giving was... They had quite a few reasons why they felt that this was the case. And one of them was... You know, some things were like, you know, failed breadwinner, losing children and bitter custody disputes. But also the fact that in our country, we tend to want stoic males who don't express their feelings. So men are hesitant to talk about their feelings. So, you know, so they're not, there's nowhere for them to go to talk about how they're feeling, you know. So these things to sort of snowball rather than get taken care of. One of the other things they said, though, is that in media, men... or feel like they don't have a place anymore, and media isn't helping with that because men in media now are stupid. That's how we're displayed. Like if you watch TV commercials, it's always a dumb dad. Or if you watch TV shows, the dad is always the dumb guy. There's a smart woman and there's a dumb guy. That's become the stereotype, which I think would have, maybe that worked 30 years ago as like a kind of funny reversal on the reality of the fact that men were tended to be the dominant breadwinner in the family. And so for the woman to have that kind of turnaround was kind of witty and different. But I think nowadays where there's way more parity in a marriage between what the man and woman bring into the household. In lots of cases, the women are the primary breadwinner and the man is the secondary income. You know, it's now it just feels like it's just kicking someone, you know, like instead of just being a funny joke, the constant need to always have like the dumb guy, you know.
When do you think, well, I got two questions on that.
Sure.
One, there's just a basic thing on the suicide thing, and it feels weird to like mm-hmm. brought it. All right, now when you...
Well, I just think of that, it just makes me think of that because I was reading that article, it talked about this prevalence of the dumb man in media.
Maybe. Here's what I would, and this is just off the top of my head, sure. I don't know shit. But like let's look back at something like It's a Wonderful Life. Okay. And there's a movie about suicide. There's a movie sure. about a guy who gets to the end of his rope
yeah.
and just goes, you know what? Things would be better off if I wasn't in this world
mm-hmm.
and tries to kill himself.
Yeah.
Now, could you imagine his wife Mary and even if things got bad going, these kids are better off with me dead. I'm going to go kill myself. Of course not, because the kids need her.
Yeah.
She's needed.
But they need him too. He just doesn't see
no,
that.
They need him for money.
Okay.
They need him for things that, you know, and if he can be replaced by more money,
yeah.
he can kill himself and it's they're better off. That's her, but the mom would never think
yeah.
I could leave and as long as the kids had some money,
yeah.
they'd be better off. That money would be their mom now.
Sure. Okay.
No, they
okay.
couldn't. But I think there might be a bit of that with people that kill themselves in that the guy goes, well, things are okay. If you take me out of the equation, I'm not needed.
Yeah.
Things are gonna be okay. Whereas I think a lot of women are doing things that they can't fucking leave because, you know, they're needed,
mm-hmm.
you know? So maybe there's a little bit of that. Okay. Back into the sitcom world. Back when we were in the 80s, it's weird to bring up Cosby now as an example.
Sure.
But like, you know, I mean, Cosby was like the number one sitcom. By the way, let's talk sirens.
Nope, they're going away.
Oh, but the siren's going away, so we're not going to play the siren game. you had Cosby.
Yes.
Okay. And now that was not a dumb guy.
Okay.
His wife was not dumb. No sure. one was dumb. Then you also had family ties.
Mm-hmm.
There was one dumb guy, and that was the daughter's boyfriend. But everyone was smart in that, basically. They just okay. had different opinions.
Sure.
So where did the dumb... Was it Fox coming on with, like, Married with Children? Because even that, the dad in that is not a dumb guy. He's just a fed-up guy.
Okay.
And then you had The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And Dad was a dumb guy in that.
Sure.
Yeah, and that was very, very popular. Was that the start of the dumb guy kind of movement, do you think?
I think it existed before that, though. I think Archie Bunker was the dumb guy. I think...
Yeah, he was dumb, but Edith was dumber.
I think Dick Van Dyke was the dumb guy.
No, Dick Van Dyke.
You don't think so?
No, Dick Van Dyke wasn't dumb.
You don't think everyone Laura was the sensible one and he was
No,
the...
no, she was the overly emotional freak okay. out at the
yeah,
drop
maybe
of a hat
right.
thing.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah,
no,
yeah,
everyone
yeah.
respected and looked to
Yeah, you're right.
Patrick.
No, no, yeah,
yeah,
he was competent. You're right. Yeah, so I wonder when that
but,
changed
but let's
happened.
Go even...
But I'm thinking more of TV commercials,
okay,
not so
okay,
much
but
of...
Okay, but TV commercials are a tough thing because a TV commercial is a comedy sketch.
Yeah.
So in a comedy sketch... You're looking, there's two things about that. It's like, it's a comedy sketch, so you need probably a dumb person, someone who doesn't know what they're doing because
yeah.
there's no need for the product otherwise.
Sure.
If you had two competent people, why the fuck do you need new soap? Okay. You're living your life great.
Yeah.
So one person has to be incompetent.
Yeah.
All right, and who's probably buying the soap? Probably the wife, even nowadays.
Yeah.
So who are you catering to? The wife. So who's going to be dumb? The husband.
Sure.
Makes sense. This is our little comedy sketch. Enjoy.
Yeah.
And that's how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But when we go back to something like the Marx Brothers or Three Stooges or what have you,
yeah.
wasn't it always dumb? There was always like a dummy, you know, an oblivious dummy, you know, in things.
I don't think, who would you say was a dummy in Marx Brothers? They're all kind of cagey.
Chico.
Oh, no. Chico's really smart.
He was a con guy.
He was a con man,
but
yeah.
he didn't know about the sanity clause, you know.
Well, I mean, that's the silly pun stuff of that notwithstanding. I mean, you know.
Well, it's a silly pun based on I don't understand what you're saying.
We can bring up the Tutti Frutti ice cream sketch where he successfully sells an entire set of encyclopedias to Groucho's character on the pretense
True.
That
they are
he's
all
going
good,
to win.
They're all good con guys.
Yeah. And
okay.
So,
but the, like I looked when I was talking about the
Kevin. The Three Stooges are really all dumb.
They're all dumb.
They're all dummies.
Yeah, and
yeah.
you look at someone like...
He even says that, you bunch of dummies.
You look at someone like a Buster Keaton in most of his things, you know, the house falling on him.
Yeah.
That's not... He's not stupid, but he is oblivious. He's not aware of his surroundings, and so things happen. He'll sit on the train, not realizing it's about to start, and then he's going off.
Yeah.
So is he a dumb guy or is he an oblivious guy? Because I think that's really what Kevin is in Ghostbusters, is the oblivious guy. He's in his own world.
I don't know if he's a... I wouldn't put him as a dumb guy either, because the idea of a Buster Keaton film is, yes, he starts off as sort of... Maybe as sort of the oblivious guy, or the uncertain guy, or the not really... You know, the bewildered guy.
Yeah.
But then he reaches some point of, you know, absolute super competence, and he saves the day. Sure. Whether it's in college, where he suddenly does like a whole bunch of sports in a row to get to save the girl, or the general where he jumps on a train and goes after to rescue his girlfriend.
What's
and
the one where
he's
being
train.
Chased by all the brides?
Seven Chances.
Right. Now, I like that as an example of, like, he's walking down the street. He does not know there are all these brides around him.
He doesn't even know that his friend has put an ad in the paper.
No, he doesn't.
To get
That's the thing. Oblivious, oblivious, oblivious.
Yeah.
Then he's what? Whoa! Now he gets it, and he's fully in and running.
Sure, yeah.
All right, let me go even farther. Laurel and Hardy, are those two dumb guys?
Yeah, those are dumb guys.
Yeah, dumb guys.
Yeah.
So it feels like, I don't think there's any negative in being dumb guys in comedy, you know? So I don't think it bothers me.
So you feel like the TV commercial is more of a comedy sketch than I have to agree with you. It's not a serious examination of modern culture, you know, the fact that this dumb guy doesn't know how to balance a checkbook, but his wife does.
Well, have we gotten into this ever?
Look at this dumb guy had to bring in the bank to figure this stuff out.
I mean, the shorter/longer version, is like in every infomercial for whatever the product is, like it's something that stacks your bowls.
Yeah.
You always got to have a thing where someone's reaching in the cupboard and then all the bowls fall on them. Or they're trying to get something and then it's flipping out of their hands and now they're covered in spaghetti sauce. And have we talked about what that's really about? At all on this show?
I don't even know what that is.
Okay. Almost every infomercial has... So whatever your product is, you know, you've got to usually have it in black and white where you show someone trying to do the normal thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then it's, whoa, whoa, whoa! Geez. And what it really is about is they're not catering necessarily to people who are able-bodied. They're catering to the elderly, and they're catering to people who are mildly handicapped.
Oh,
and that's what they do go through in their life.
Okay.
So we play it for comedy,
but
so you're not ashamed. We're not going, oh, buddy, you missing a hand? Oh, you old and shaky? What's going on? Oh, buddy, oh, sad. No, just show some fucker dropping some shit. And they're like, we're all enjoying a laugh.
Yeah.
But by the way, if this is a problem, here's a product that solves this problem for you. And we're going to play it that way. I mean, that's the shortest version of the dumb guy kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think our takeaway from this is that you're okay with men killing themselves. I would have to say that anti-male is ridiculous, really. Because first thing is, obviously there's a lot of people that are really nervous about a film where the majority of the attention is on a group of women. I mean, is that your feeling that, you know, because they're the feature of the film, that it's a weak point to the movie, that the men around them are part of the comedy, you know, because that's what everyone else is in a film, where you have your main characters and the people they meet are the things they play off of.
Mm-hmm.
And either they're exploiting those people or they're helping those people. There's only two relationships there in that kind of film, unless it's a love story, but that's not what this is. So they're either...
Yeah, there is no love story in Ghostbusters, which is
interesting. Yeah. I was hoping there would be. But that was my all women version of the film with no men in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I really wanted, was just everyone be played by women. But that's okay. It didn't happen. Mm.
I was expecting actually more cameos from female comedians.
I wanted
just small little cameos.
I want an all cats version of Cats as well.
Okay,
just cats on stage.
I think you should go to the Cat Cafe. I think that would be very similar to an all version of Cats version of Cats.
I think that's a terrible criticism of the film. This is on that grounds alone. It's the fact that that's the essence of a film. There are women in the film. They're also patsies. The mayor's aide, who spends all her time trying to make them look bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a great, you know, it's not like she's held up as some sort of paragon of virtue. She's obviously a silly character too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not everyone who's it's not like all women are great and all men are bad in the film.
Here's one thing, just
and it's a fun turnaround to have a ditzy male secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Even if
and he
is,
gets so many huge laughs.
Even if he's
huge
not,
laughs.
If you want to say that he's oblivious or if he's the dumb blonde, it doesn't really matter. If it's fun that we can laugh at Goldie Hawn doing it, it's equally fun to do it with Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah, at the very least, if you want to do that kind of payback, you know, you can go like, hey man, this has gone on forever. This is one example of flipping
and
this.
And he's only the one guy in the film that is that way. The other people are competent. There's a theater manager who who's confident. Yes, he has a funny scream, but that's nothing to do with like being an insult to a male. Mm-hmm. There's the villain. You know, he's competent. He's a competent villain.
And I was not a watcher of Coach, but, you know, that was a show that was a very male show with two dumb guys in it.
Yeah.
Two full-on dumb guy characters.
I've literally never
Jerry
seen it.
Jerry Van Dyke. And great. Then there was another guy who was like a big kind of
professional dummy.
Yeah, big dummy. And they're just like, they're just dumb guys.
Yeah.
And on Cheers, you got a problem with Woody? Because Woody's a dumb guy.
For
you
sure.
know, do you have a problem with Coach? He was a dumb guy.
Yeah.
You have dumb guys. That's fine.
That's part of the humor.
Yeah.
You know, you need that character who doesn't understand things to push the film along.
Yeah, you don't want a character to now say you're a stupid idiot and make him cry now. But I don't think he would even understand it. He's so dumb.
But it's fine.
He's a little bit Peter Sellers in, you know, being there. He just is in his own world.
I thought that they had a lot of fun with the fact that he's so handsome and the... what's her face? Kristen Wiig's character being in love with or being in lust with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's great.
But in a kind of teenage girl way where it's just like,
exactly.
Just dumb way.
Yeah.
Just like, that's good.
It's a lot of fun. And the fact that Melissa McCarthy's character can't see that Chris Hemsworth is handsome. That's great. I just like, there's lots of fun things in it. To me, the bigger complaint about the film is, I have two big complaints about the film.
Okay,
one,
hit me.
One is fan service.
Yeah,
I really hated
work.
The cameos.
None of them work.
I hated every cameo.
Yep.
Did not need them. Did not want them.
And I can solve that problem in like about three sentences. But go ahead with your thing.
No, you solve it because I have just said my complaint.
All right,
it's not like I have a solution.
All right, here's
the film is made. You cannot remake the film.
Again, we're not going to try to get spoiler. But yeah, all the original Ghostbusters that are still with us have cameos, and the ones that don't have, you know, tributes in there. Okay, but here's something that it really bugs me when you plant a seed and you don't see it grow later on.
Okay.
Like at one point, they're all in their office, Ghostbusters or whatever, and they go like, yeah, you know what the problem is? These jerks. And they point at the TV, and on the TV, there's like a show called Ghost Chasers, which is like kind of one of the shows that you'd see on, you know, reality shows, and they go after ghosts, and you're like, okay, well, I guess we're going to see more of that later. Never see that again. Mm. Here's what you do. Take all the Ghostbusters, make them on that show. They're all the frauds on that show that are chasing ghosts. That'd be fun. You play them all together in a reality thing. You could even then, again, not doing too much spoilers, but Bill Murray comes on as a certain character. You could make him the character from the show, play all the same beats that he plays that kind of comes out of nowhere, which is he's kind of a skeptic, but you could have him be a guy going, listen, a fraud knows a fraud. You're just being frauds here. And the whole thing is, no, we're not frauds. Da-da-da-da-da.
I don't know. I see where you're going with it, but I don't really like the fact that it kind of rolls our characters back from the end of the first film. I've never seen Ghostbusters 2, so I have no idea.
Oh, you don't have to. No.
But I feel like
I'm just saying, since your new characters be the new characters in the reality show where you're fraud.
So you don't want them to be like the original Ghostbusters.
No. I'm saying they introduced that there is a TV show with fraudulent Ghostbusters.
So they're not their characters from the Ghostbusters.
No. They're just playing reality show characters.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying now. Yeah, that would be fun. That would be a fun cameo. Instead of,
and it gets it all done. Gets it all out of the way, so you're not having all these. And the worst kind of cameos, which are you're walking up to someone with their back turned and they turn around, hello. It's like, all right, we know it's going to be you. You're like,
that's terrible.
Yeah. And now here comes.
And why do
fools fall in love?
Why do they?
Because they're oblivious. And it's funny.
That's hilarious. The other thing is, like, okay, when you guys were in this Ghostbusters movie, it was, I don't know, was it 25 years ago? How long ago was it now? Longer than that.
It was 84.
84. So it was 84 years ago. So,
four score.
You know, they, four score and 4 years ago. They I don't want to, I'm going to tell you a little secret here. They have aged since they were in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Annie Potts doing okay, though.
Oh, was she behind the desk in the hotel? She did look good. But I mean, why do you want your self to be compared to your younger self? You know what I mean? Like, you're appearing in this movie and you're like, oh, I remember when he was younger and in this movie.
Well, I think everyone knows what Bill Murray looks like. I mean, he has not been a shrinking violet
I know.
In society. We but, all know Bill
we
Murray.
We all know what they all look like, but we don't see them and compare them to their younger selves every time we look at them.
Though I did like, I liked in Zombieland where Bill Murray just dressed up in his Ghostbusters outfit and they're all just like goofing around pretending to be Ghostbusters while playing the thing.
Yeah, that was
fun. That's fine.
That's fine.
But yeah, it's jarring to see
it's
them.
Jarring. jarring, yeah, because you're relating them to their past role in a movie from 84 years ago. I can't believe it's that long. I think you're mixed up a little bit.
1984.
Oh, 1984.
Yes.
My mistake, everyone. See how the dumb guy gets played?
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
It was a tough year. Thank
you,
brother. Everybody was watching all of us.
And my other problem with the film is the typical problem.
This is your third problem of the two problems that you had.
No. Okay. This was the same problem.
Very good.
All the cameo stuff. This is my second problem with the film. It's a common problem to all movies. We've talked about this many times, which
popcorn
is...
popcorn's too salty.
Didn't get popcorn during this film. It was the overabundance of CGI at the end of the film. It was just way too much garbage, horrible hack CGI. That now that I know how they make it, I now understand why it's so terrible. I'm glad Brian De Palma opened my eyes to what makes it terrible.
Oh, okay. Why is it terrible?
Well, because it's not directed by the director.
Yeah,
they really have no control over it. They get a package of stuff, and then
the
actors.
I was talking about this with the former guest of the show, Vicky Van. Yeah, she was going. Yeah, because I was going. Like, there's an amazing scene at the end with the two guns and doing some stuff. And like, whoa! The director didn't do that.
Yeah, I know.
That was someone else. That was the special effects person.
I know that because there's a second unit director on all movies.
But
that do
obviously,
all
the director has to approve everything and sees the storyboards.
A little bit,
go
but
on.
The previs for CGI is pretty much locked in. Mm-hmm. You don't get a lot of say over that. You just get it and you have to go with it. And so it's just full of corny moves that we've all seen in a gajillion movies. And just because they're doing it using laser guns to lift things up and throw them around, which by the way is dumb, it doesn't make it any more palatable to watch a scene that has absolutely no risk. There's no element of danger. There's no sense of any kind of problem. Yeah. It's just super easy for them to throw around the things that, you know, I can understand why they don't put the crossing stream joke in, because they're not guys. So we don't need a crossing stream joke. That's fine. But, you know, the fact that they're just like whipping these things around like crazy, and there's no sense of even risk. Like in the first film, there's a sense of these guns we're using are really dangerous and really destroy a lot of stuff. Like in this film, they're in the theater and they do a bit of smashy, but it doesn't feel like, you know, it's super dangerous.
No, the first time they ever do use it, even the person that invented it is like backed up the farthest and just like, you should use it. Why? You got the longest arms. Yeah. Go, and it doesn't work. And that's a good gag.
Yeah.
You know, they play that well. My biggest problem was, a couple of things. But my biggest problem probably was locked off camera. And making it feel
explain
like
explain what that is.
Locked off camera is just you set the camera up, you aim it at an actor and have them do their dialogue and probably then yell more lines, funny lines for them to say.
Yeah.
And then they say lines and then you lock it off with another actor and whatever. Whereas sort of like someone like an Edgar Wright or what have you takes the camera and follows a person along. Even if you look at the original Ghostbusters, the camera is almost always moving.
Yeah.
You know, it's organic.
That's what a camera should do.
It's flowing.
Camera should move in scenes. Like if you watch any film directed by a competent director, the camera is always either mysteriously drifting in either direction or pulling back or moving in on scenes.
So what you're getting is you're basically getting a sitcom, three camera shoot kind of vibe. And it just takes you out of it. Mm-hmm. And there was a few too many times where someone did a joke that was not a joke that a character would do, but it's just a joke that takes you out of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to ruin one joke here for you. And here's the joke.
Please ruin it for me.
Which is just like, hey, that hair's a weird color because the person has red hair. Yeah. You know, the box said Garfield. That's funny that it's like the color of Garfield's orange hair. That's great.
Yeah.
And then a beat later, James Garfield.
Yeah.
No, fuck you. fuck you. Yeah. No, not James Garfield.
Yeah.
No, it's the color of Garfield. That's a good joke. It also works because Bill Murray played Garfield. There's some sort of like loose tie to something there. There's something funny about that. You're kind of the Venkman of this group, and that's Garfield. All right, there's a little something, but like James Garfield. Who the fuck knows what James Garfield's hair looked like? Shut up. Don't double down. Don't tag a joke like that. And a human wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Boo on that. Don't do that. And there's a bit too much of that business. And I you know who I blame for that? As I always blame, Judd Apatow.
Judd Apatow.
Judd Apatow, the guy who like does two jokes too much per scene and just like, take it back, man. Take it back because we're losing reality and character.
The influence of Judd Apatow, yeah. Well, I will go a little bit further then with your complaint about.
Take it out.
And I just want to say, like, I'm making.
You say it's anti-men.
I totally say it's anti-men.
You want to kill yourself after watching.
After I watched this movie, it was anti-menin. They do not like the antiperspirant.
Yeah. Anti-menin.
the problem, the other problem I had, which is when the movie was over, and I really like the Holtzman character.
Floors.
I really like the Holtzman character, but I felt like she wasn't integrated into the scenes properly because they didn't know how to cut to her to get her jokes to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I always felt like it was a weird cut away from a static scene to her to make a little joke.
Whereas what you need...
If there's more cutting between people talking, cut to her. But if you're cutting to all of them talking, cut to her joke, perfect. But because it's a static scene with two people talking, then a weird cut to her for a weird kind of surreal little joke, which... I just want to say I loved all the jokes. I just loved her in the film. Yeah. I don't know her very well. And I really enjoyed her body language and everything she brought to the movie. But just the way it was directed just fell apart there for me.
Because what she was doing was physicality.
Yeah.
Everyone else was doing verbal humor. And she was doing physical business, little business. And where I think what they should have done with that is if you had a director who was a little bit better, you'd have her in the background doing some
shit
while you're talking in the foreground.
Exactly.
And now we're getting that nice sense of place.
You've got a Harpo. Put Harpo in the
and
scene.
And you never got the sense that their headquarters that was above the Chinese restaurant was a real thing. It just felt like a set.
Yeah.
It's a set. Who fucking cares?
Yeah.
There's a phone.
There's no noise from a restaurant. There's no feeling of patrons being there or any kind of... Yeah.
Yeah, you want someone to come up and like be looking for an order or they go down or have to run through the Chinese restaurant
because
the ghosts are attacking. There's a whole bunch of like
stuff
things
you
for
could do. Yeah.
Also, by the way, sorry. Here's the worst part of the movie. Aside from Garfield...
For a film we enjoy, we certainly are complaining, aren't we, folks?
Because otherwise you would just go, oh, it's like Batman v Superman shit. It's all shit. But aside from the Garfield joke, which is the worst joke, but the worst, let's go the worst cameo, and boy, this is going deep because all the cameos stank.
Yeah.
But the worst cameo by far.
Is it stunk or stank?
It's both.
Okay.
Coincidentally, it was so bad, it's both. Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What year is this?
When what?
Yeah. Why do I care about that?
Yeah. Is that like your sense of like, let's get a star, let's get a popular figure in this movie. Let's really make it.
What it reminded me of was I was like, where did I last see this fucking guy?
Is heavy metal that bankrupt?
Well, first of all, I think like he just broke up with Sharon, right? Like recently.
Mm.
So
he's doing
Sharon joke, though. Sharon. Oh, that's sad because he's not with her.
Yeah.
You could have cut that because that's sad. But like the last kind of thing where I think I saw him as a big thing was in Little Nicky. Where, like, you know, some guy turns into a bat, they throw him to Ozzy Osbourne, and Ozzy Osbourne bites the head off him.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's fine. But even then, it was like, meh, I guess. Ozzy Osbourne, meh? Really?
Come on, guys.
I suppose. Remember he had a reality show, too?
Yeah.
Huh? Anyone? And, like, to the point where now it's just like, maybe that is just... like, what they should have done is this. They should have had his name not on the sign.
Yeah.
They should have had Ozzy Osbourne just there saying something. And then some guy just sticks his hand through him and just goes, hey, this guy's a ghost too. And then they go and catch him. Maybe do that. But it's like, for fuck's sake, boo. No. But one thing that was...
That's all they could get.
What's that?
That's all they could get. James Hetfield or whatever his name is from Metallica was too busy. Is that his name? I don't know.
I don't know anybody.
He was too busy with the feud with the McCoys.
You know what? Maybe that James Garfield joke isn't the worst joke I've ever heard. Here's where I was a little worried.
Yeah.
Because like off the top, and I'm not going to say what the jokes are, but you have a guy, and it's one of the guys from Silicon Valley who's a very funny guy.
That's where he's from. Yeah.
And he's walking along, and he's doing some. He's doing a tour guide thing, and he's doing some business.
Yeah.
And it's funny. He's doing some funny.
Good. It's good stuff.
It's good stuff. Okay, but it could. But I went like, because. It was this is kind of a 30 Rock universe where everything's weird.
Yeah.
So your first thing out of the gate is, okay, you're not doing any straight material.
Yeah.
You're just going right off the top. We're in crazy land.
Yeah.
But then he's able to like get things to a scary point.
Yeah.
And we turn off the comedy and then we go straight to scary and that kind of works.
The second unit did a really good job directing that sequence.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some good stuff with that. But I was a little bit concerned with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it made me kind of think of Ghostbusters, the original, and trying to think, like, does anybody but the Ghostbusters have a joke, have a funny line?
Rick Moranis?
Yeah, that's true. He is part of the, but I consider almost him part of the team.
Okay.
I don't think Dana has any funny lines.
No.
Rick Moranis is just a straight out funny, he's a dumb character.
Yeah, he's a dumb character.
Yeah. And everyone loved him. to the point where like he's a Ghostbuster in the next movie.
Well, that movie's also anti-male.
But does anyone else like have?
Do you see anyone receive a letter in that film? No.
That's true. But yeah, no, everything else is straight. Everyone else is playing things straight.
Yeah.
Everyone's a straight man. You know, it's the hotel. It's like, well, I didn't know it would be this much money. I'm not going to pay it. I'm this sort of fellow.
Yeah.
Ooh, you can see me in a 1930s movie if you wanted to.
Yes, Franklin Pangborn,
yes,
reborn.
Indeed. I'm the mayor, and I feel this way, and I'm also a 1930s guy. This is what a mayor talks like.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the guy from the EPA, and I say we turn this whole thing off.
Oh, good old William Atherton.
That's right, we're turning it off.
How did he become a villain?
Uh-huh.
He went from a leading man, like in A Day of the Locust and other films in the 70s.
Good villain. Work.
But he's a good, good as a Weasley guy.
But it's not as generous comedically. Like, they don't let anyone else really get the laughs. Mm-hmm. Whereas this version, if you're on,
but that's a Marx Brothers movie.
Yeah, everyone else is straight.
Everyone else is straight, and you're the funny thing.
And that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
Or you do it almost it's weird to say, but Mel Brooks style.
Yeah.
Where if you're on screen, you've probably got some funny business to say, even if you're the villain or whatever. You're going to do some.
Well, that's much broader, and I think they wanted it to be kind of a scary mix of humor and horror. So if it's too broad, you end up with Transylvania 65,000.
65,000, yeah. And one thing I did like was the kind of pro weirdo message. There's I like that.
Okay.
I also like that,
it's not really unusual in films nowadays, but yep.
No, this was actively pro-weirdo, to the point where there's even a toast at one point where one of the characters who's the over-the-top character, does a thing about,
clearly,
I never fit in.
Clearly kind of played as sort of an Asperger's type of character.
Yeah, who's trying to say quickly all the things that are hard to say. Yeah. And they're going to have to go back to being crazy soon, but let's just get this out, and this means a lot. And it's like, very sweet. But I like
that.
I like that... the villain and the heroes, which is always a kind of good thing, both almost have the same origin stories, mm-hmm. but, the villain is using that as an excuse of like, I was treated shitty, so I'm going to fuck up the world.
Yeah.
And they're like, we were treated shitty. That's no excuse for fucking up the world.
Yeah.
We're going to try our best to like make things better.
Yeah.
And it's like, I like that as well. I think that's a good message to shove in there too.
Can I make one more complaint? And I'm sorry, everyone. If I sound like I'm being too complaining, this is just sort of writing things that...
No.
One of the things in the film... And this is not really a big spoiler. This sort of explains Kristen Wiig's character, which was that when she was a young girl, she experienced what's a common hypnagogic state, which is the hag dream, the dream where you're in paralysis and an old woman stands at the foot of your bed and looks at you.
Right.
In the film, they use that very common experience as a ghost experience. And so when I heard that, it took me out of the film because then I was like, well, that's not a ghostly experience. That's obviously she's having a hypnagogic experience. She's in a hypnagogic state and she's doing the hag dream, which is a common dream. It's either out of body experience, alien abduction, or the hag dream. Those are three very common experiences people go through in that. The hypnagogic state, if people don't know who are listening, is when you are coming out of deep sleep. And so you're still asleep, but you're in a sort of a mid place between wakefulness and dreaming, and things that you dream in that state can seem very real. Because they'll still be in your memory as a real thing, and your brain will integrate them into your life as memories. Mm-hmm. And so when you wake up, you'll have trouble. You'll be confused because it will feel super real that you're floating out of your body in another room or above your bed or whatever. And usually, if you think about it, there's details that are blurry because you don't know everything in your house by memory. Or you'll have memories of things and you'll change them. So if you think about your kitchen, it'll probably be something like the table's in a different place or something like that, because things have changed. But so this is very common. So when they're going, I was just like, why not choose something that's not a common experience, that's a fake experience, like a fake ghostly experience? But because no one believed me. Yes, because it's a common thing that people have, a common dream that's not a real ghostly experience. That's why they didn't believe you.
Then after that, though, they called her Ghost Girl and everyone made fun of her and that, mocked her and whatever. Sure. Actually, the weird thing for me when I heard that was later I was saying to Pia, it's like, oh, yeah, I had that when I was a kid. I absolutely had that when I was a kid.
Sure.
Because every night I would be lying in bed and I would see this moon floating at the very end of my bed.
Yeah.
And it would have this little smile. It was basically the moon from, there's a TV show called The Friendly Giant here. And the moon rises at the very end of the show.
The cow jumps,
and it was
over
like,
it?
that was the moon.
Okay.
And I would see it and I would call for my parents and they'd come in and it would be gone. And they wouldn't believe me.
Yeah.
And they'd think I was just trying to get attention or whatever I wasn't seeing it. It's like, no, I'm seeing it. And so I always slept with the lights on after that.
Yeah.
Because it was like, no, it's the only way to get rid of it is to turn the lights on.
Yeah.
And so to me, that actually worked because I went like, oh, shit, that, But you're right. It could be, that could just be nothing.
It just feels weird.
What would you say would be a better experience?
How about she was visited by her grandmother and no one believed her?
There was,
and it was a real experience, a real emotional experience for her, and no one believed her. Don't you think that's better?
To me, it worked because it was very similar to something I went through. So to me personally, that worked
for me.
For me
personally, because I know it's a fake experience, people, and I shouldn't say fake because it's obviously a real scary situation, but because I know that it has a physical explanation, that it's not a spiritual explanation, then it's... It doesn't work because it takes me out of the film and it makes me not.
You can give the write up about what it really is. No, I understand. One of the original pitches for like Ghostbusters 3, it was one of those ones where it was like a replacement. You know, where there's going to be new Ghostbusters, and giving the torch over to the old Ghostbusters was someone who was raised for a couple of years by someone who I believe was a grandmother, and then you found out later on he went outside and into like some shed and saw the grandmother's body and realized he'd been raised by a ghost for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's
and
cool.
And so that was his kind of experience with that.
Yeah.
And it changed him forever.
I guess the problem with having it in that or having it as a grandmother it would be really hard then to explain why the ghosts are so angry and have to be dealt with in this really violent way.
Do you want to get nerdy?
I don't really want to get too nerdy because I feel like we're getting, but if you want to, you look like you really want to explain this.
Here's
to me,
my nerdy so thing about this.
Okay.
I think that there's a good chance, and this is my nerdy, fanficky, bullshitty, whatever.
Okay.
These aren't
ghosts.
This
is your Ghostbuster slapstick.
These aren't anything to do with
dead bodies.
Dead spirits coming back to life.
Sure.
This is just what people think would be there. That's what appears.
So it's a psychic manifestation.
Because he's
not
planting
a
machine, right?
Yeah.
That somehow is gathering this ectoplasm or whatever together. So say this is the spot where, you know, off the top they're saying, oh, this woman was in the basement and she was tortured and all this kind of stuff. Now everyone who's there is picturing this woman who's tortured in the basement. You set this machine up, it gathers that, the thoughts are there, it creates the thing, and there it is. Now why I'm going nerdily into this is both this film and the original film had the same thing at the end, which was pick the form of the destroyer. You choose the form of the destroyer.
Okay.
Because we don't have, and I assume it's because they don't have the imagination to come up with it. They need humans to go, oh, I'm terrified of this. That's what it is then.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
But what if that's the thing through the whole thing? We're just like, you know, what are you scared of? I'm scared of this. Well, that's what's going to appear in front of you now that I've, you know, unleashed all this stuff.
I guess it's
not real. Because none of the ghosts act like ghosts. No ghosts give you extra information.
No.
No ghosts are people that you know in any of the movies, really.
Yeah.
You know, and saying things to you. They're just who you know from legend would be in this place.
Yeah.
That's who arrives, you know, and shows up in front of you. Even the guy who's the villain, you know, he's got a big plan, and maybe he, you know.
Okay, that doesn't really work.
No, it doesn't.
Because he is a spirit.
No, it doesn't fall apart.
He is a spirit.
No, it doesn't fall apart. Here's why it doesn't fall apart. Because by that point, they've read his plan.
Yeah.
And in that plan, he shows all the things he's going to do.
Okay.
So now that's in their head.
Okay.
So they could just as much have created him because they've seen all of this. The one thing that you can't have at the end is, who's the end destructor form? They didn't read that far ahead. And that's when he has to go, what's the final part of this? Because he can't think of it himself.
All right.
Maybe we're really getting to spoilers now, but that's what I feel. I always like the idea that
the
reason that, like in the original Ghostbusters, I even thought that, which was, you know, again, in my nerdydoms, was how you beat ghosts is ghosts have no imagination.
Mm.
They're just repeating the same actions over and over again, or they have one urge to do, like Slimer just wants to eat. And that's why you, with your imagination, can defeat a ghost because, you know, we're still alive and are capable of original thought.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
And that's me being a nerd.
Nice.
Ba-boom.
Nice. Well, before we go,
let's discuss all of Stranger Things.
I was just going to say, what's the best show on TV right now? Stranger Things.
Yeah.
If you have Netflix,
what's the best network on TV right now? Netflix. Holy shit.
I guess that's true.
You know? Coming off of like
you're not going to give it to AMC for AMC? Better Call Saul and
Preacher?
Preacher.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
But
you know, with Lady HBO Dynamite with BoJack Horseman and Mr. Show.
Oh, man. They've been really,
Voltron. We got hooked on Voltron.
Sorry to hear that. But they
good twists.
The arms have to twist on and off of this Voltron.
I know, you're pro-Micronauts, so you can't be pro-Voltron.
I cannot be pro-Voltron. Yeah, you're right. And it's like they really understand their demographic as well. Though. Like they really know how to hook their... And then there's weird things like Frankie and Grace, or Grace and Frankie, whichever way it goes.
But they appeal to a certain...
Yes, I know, but is that their demographic? Like my mom and dad,
yes,
aren't, my
yes,
mom and dad aren't watching...
No, it's not your mom and dad. Your mom and dad might be a little... Well, yeah, they might be around the age. My mother-in-law, we showed her Netflix, and it was like we just gave her a pot of gold. Like, you can't believe how excited she was. First of all, because it had... Here's how you hook people that are your parents' age.
It has murder mysteries.
It has all the murder mysteries.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then you go like, but mom likes the nature shows. It's got some nature shows on there. Oh, geez. Okay. Yeah. All right. How about the movies from the past that you like? Some classic stuff. Yeah, we've got enough of that
shit.
They have
a few of them.
It's not that big a deal.
It's no TCM.
That's right. But now that you're watching...
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to throw this at you. Yeah, it's like, do you like Jane Fonda? Do you like Lily Tomlin? Did you like 9 to 5? I sure did. They're in a series together.
Of all the things I've seen in the last little while, though, that Stranger Things has been the best. Best in lots of ways. It was a great story. Did not fall apart, ever.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't get to the end. You're just kind of like, what? Oh, why couldn't they? They didn't finish it. You know, it just paid off right to the very end.
Which is tough to do with a
horror thing. It is
especially
tough to
do. Long horror
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. Like, something to me like American Gothic did not work because eventually the scariness...
Which version are you talking about?
I only saw the first episode of it.
Which show are you
talking about? American Gothic. American Horror Story. Sorry.
Okay.
American Horror Story.
Because there's been two shows.
Yeah, not American Gothic. I'm sorry. I was getting mixed up. The American Horror Story, which I've only saw the first season of it. And I just, you know, it's a lot of ghosts and stuff like that. But eventually, you get used to the ghosts. They just become other characters, and they're no longer scary. They're just hanging around the house. It's kind of like, well, that guy, he's still there. You know, and that's always a problem in horror. This show got it right by not revealing very much. And even when it revealed stuff, there's still a lot of mystery behind what they were telling you. What I also liked about it was it got the 80s exactly right. You know, it's one of those films that it's not my daughter's view of the 80s, which, you know, their view of the 80s is everyone wore skinny ties, wore sunglasses, and there was a lot of neon green around and neon pink. And that's the 80s, right? Everyone?
Yeah.
No, that wasn't the 80s. The 80s were like the blandest. Like, there's a great scene of this character named Barbara, and she comes up to her friend, and she's got short red hair, and it's kind of curly, but they've attempted to tame her curls by cutting her hair short, and she's got the horrible teardrop glasses on, and she's wearing this plaid blouse, terrible plaid blouse, with a lace collar done all the way up to the top button, and you're just like, yep, that's what girls look like when I went to school.
Mm-hmm.
Poor them. They got the short end of the stick. The short end of the style stick, because for whatever reason, fashion took a real turn into the ditch in the 80s.
A small thing that I thought they got so right was just how kids ride bikes.
That too, yeah.
Yeah, it was just this like just.
And you can watch. I mean, it's an ET thing, you know, that they're.
They ride bikes like kids do in ET, but even better, I think, because they just like run out, grab their bikes like they don't give a shit, grab on them, and then when they're done with their bikes, they just throw them.
Yeah.
Just toss them.
That's what you do.
Fuck it. Who cares? No one's going to steal these bikes. No. I'm going to throw them on the front lawn.
Yeah, yeah.
Who cares? You know, whereas a kid now would be like, I got to put my bike somewhere. We got to hide it. We got to do it. But
they just
ride it with their knees high and just like, oh, it's just so right.
Yeah. No, I just.
Them playing D&D was just like so right.
Mm-hmm.
Just like everything's right about this. The basement is right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it really felt like the time period. Like, you know, having grown up in that time, I didn't really have a real nostalgia for the 80s. I think it was a terrible time in terms of music and, you know, not completely terrible, but just overall not great. And it really got that. Like, the guy and the girl are making out to Toto's Africa. You know, you're just like, oh, fucking that song. You know, and there's so many scenes with, like, horrible music playing where you're just like, people forget this. Like, this music was, people listened to this. And they enjoyed it. They thought they should enjoy it, so they listened to it.
Yeah, the worst part isn't the horror going on.
It's the yacht rock playing on the radio. I really enjoyed it. I thought everyone... The only person I had trouble with was Winona Ryder's character, and just because her hair wasn't right. It's like she refused to go with an 80s hairstyle.
Hmm.
They're like, okay, Winona, come over. We'll just feather your hair a little bit. No. No, you can't. Can't touch my 2016 hairstyle. Okay.
And she played a little too big off the top.
Yeah, I thought so too.
It did work better.
It did work a little better.
Later when she was flipping out.
Yeah, yeah. But it's too high for the beginning. Yeah, I agree. She wasn't, I thought she was part of one
and
of the weaker parts.
And the kid missing
his
teeth was just great.
Oh, yeah. And that kid was a good actor.
Oh, he was a really
good
actor.
He had the best reactions.
Like,
to the
point where I was like, I know they're doing a second season, but I'm like, oh, his teeth will have grown in by then, and he's going to look different, and we're never going to get this
again. Are they going to use the same kids? It's going to be a different thing, isn't it?
I don't know.
It can't be the same cast and everything. It's got to be a different story.
Well, I don't want to... Okay, how far have you gotten?
Oh, I finished the show.
You finished the show?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the...
No, I know it doesn't have to, but it would be better if they just did something different.
I see what you're saying.
Do a different 80s trope.
Oh, I see where you're going with this. All right. Fair enough. Let's bring things to...
Well, let me just... Before we go on,
please,
then...
Please, go ahead.
I have had a couple weeks of drop everything and go to the movies.
Okay.
Just on a whim.
So you want to review a few more movies?
Yeah, I just want to talk about a couple other films that I saw recently. One was, have you ever seen Suspiria, the Dario Argento film?
No, it looks scary, so I don't want
to
see it.
Didn't we go to see it during No, we didn't.
Nope, too scary.
There was a brief time where I was able to get you to go to horror films, and then you stopped.
Nope, that was a mistake.
But they were playing the sequel. It wasn't the original film, Suspiria, wasn't meant to have a sequel, but it was successful enough that a sequel was born. It was a film called Inferno, also directed by Dario Argento. It's sort of related to Suspiria, and just in the sense that there's a witch in Suspiria, and so the idea in Inferno is that there's three witches, and they all are different sort of characters. So the one is like the Mother of Silence, I believe the Mother of Silence, Mother of Tears, Mother of Sorrows, whatever, like stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And they all have different, they live in different buildings that were built for them by this architect. One in Freiburg, Germany, which is, I believe, where Suspiria takes place. One in Rome, and one in New York. So I went to see the film, but I was sitting at home, and I was like looking on my phone, and I thought, oh, the Rio's playing Dario Argento's Inferno. When is that? Oh, tonight at 9:30. Oh, well, I'm going to go. So I just got in the car. And Lisa's like, aren't you going to invite me? I said, well, it's a horror film. You don't like horror movies. Well, I can't believe you wouldn't invite me. I said, well, do you want to go? No. Okay. I'm going. So I got in my car and I drove down drove down to watch it. My review of it, my capsule review was, saw Inferno, a little half-baked. And that was my feeling of the film. It's just that, you know, he kind of had like some ideas that he took from the first film.
Yeah.
Kind of wrapped them up into this next film, but never really had like a storyline. It's more like a lot of interesting set pieces that never pay off.
Mm.
Like there's a curious scene where this woman, she's reading this book about the three sisters, or the three mothers, sorry, the three mothers.
Okay.
And it says there's a key in the basement. And she thinks, well, this building is a lot like what they're describing in this book. So this must be the building. And so she goes down and, you know, she's sort of drawn to go down into the cellar. Okay, that's scary. She just goes down into the cellar. It's a scary cellar. Someone's following her. That's scary. She goes down to the cellar, and she's looking. She finds this little part in the floor where it's kind of, like, broken. There's a hole in the floor, and it's full of water. And she's looking in there, and then, like a dummy, she drops her apartment key into the water. And it's come down, and it's hooked on something down in the water. So she's reaching down into this water to get this key. And she can't quite get it, and then she jars it, and then it floats down even further down. So then she has to like slide down into this water and go underwater down to get this key. And it's this underwater ballroom in this, I guess it's part of the hotel that flooded or, you know, it's underwater for some reason. And it's this, you know, kind of ornately decorated room with chandeliers and stuff like that. And she's going down and then the camera shows this door into this other area and it makes it kind of ominous. You're like, oh, I hope she doesn't go in there because that's a mistake to go into but her key's down there. So just get your key and get out, right? We all agree on this, right? Everybody? Yeah. Hands up. Who thinks? So then she goes down, she gets her key and then, yeah, I see you're nervous. I can tell you're kind of nervous. And like...
I'm just hoping she gets her breath. She's going to go back up.
Yeah, I know. That's the other part of these movies, right? Is like the longest holding your breath of all time. And then she's getting her key and then this door is showing, you know, and you're kind of scared. And then out of nowhere, this corpse is suddenly there and she bumps into it and, you know, and then it's like a scary sequence because she's like screaming underwater and
with all the bubbles
and she can't seem to get away from this corpse. She's every time she like does something, she bumps and she hits the ceiling and here's the corpse again and she's bumping it. And
sounds pretty funny.
Finally, she gets out.
Okay.
It's a great sequence, but you never see that room again. It's never used again. Like why? Because at the end of the film, the inferno is that the apartment building lights on fire due to people's stupidity.
Yeah.
And the character of the brother who's come there to find out what's happened to her, he's stuck in this burning building. Well, isn't that a perfect opportunity to have him escape from the fire, is to escape into this room?
Yeah, and then swim through that door.
And swim through that door and then discover the horror of the building? That would be really scary. Nope, can't have that because that would be interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in that film where it's just kind of like interesting things happen, but it doesn't really pay off in a way that's interesting. Like, and there's a sequence where this antiquarian where the woman bought her book from, he hates all the cats that are around in the alleyway around this thing. So the scene where he like captures a bunch of cats, puts them in a bag,
yeah,
takes the bag, and he has crutches, so he's got this bag full of cats that he's carrying across town to a park, which I assume is like Central Park.
Right.
So unnoticed by people, a man on crutches, walking slowly, carrying a bag full of cats.
Right. He's good at keeping a secret. Not let those cats out of the bag.
That's exactly right. He gets to the park. He gets out into the water. Of course, he can't like just drop it off the bridge into the water below. That doesn't make any sense. No, no, I'm on crutches. I got to go around to the water's edge, and then I like got to get my crutches down into the water, and then work myself out into this shallow water, and then, fall over. And then the cats, of course, he's drawn the cats with his crutch by this point. So now we hate him because he killed cats. So anything that happens to him is fine.
Yeah.
Only it should make sense, right? So he's laying on the ground. He's attacked by rats. All these rats just come out of nowhere, start attacking this guy. And you're kind of like, okay, this is kind of gross.
He had some cats to fight off the rats.
That's right. It's poetic justice.
The one thing you had that would have like stopped all these rats would have been that bag of cats.
But here's the weird thing. So he's screaming and yelling. Across the way, there's a hot dog stand. Yep. It's been established. I didn't mention it, but it was established. Okay. So we see this guy. He hears the screams. He's like, oh my God, someone's screaming. Help, help. He throws off his little peaked cap that, you know, all hot dog vendors wear. Throws it, goes running around.
Now he's a person. He's no longer in uniform.
That's right. He goes running around, crosses over this little bridge, comes running around, finds this guy, this poor fellow. Not really poor fellow because we all hate him. Yeah, fuck him. Laying there screaming because rats are stuffing that. And then he just stabs him and kills him. The hot dog guy just kills him. That's the end of the sequence. Do you ever see that hot dog guy again? No, you don't. You're like, well, what was the point of that? Like,
I mean, I've got to assume.
I want a movie to have a fucking through line that I can understand.
I assume with that he's in charge of the rats. And that's where he gets meat for his hot dogs. But you don't want old man meat. That's no good.
Well, I guess, but you're assuming that the movie doesn't make it explicit.
Why does he kill him?
Or even imply
it? Was it mercy killing because he's so far gone?
He's pretty far gone, right? He doesn't say anything. He just kills him.
But the guy who's like being eaten by rats, is he like half eaten by rats by that point?
No, he could get up. I mean, rats aren't that terrible. I mean, they'll bite you, but it's not going to chew you up.
I don't know.
Take a couple of hours.
Okay, I don't know how long he's been chewing.
Oh, it's not that long. I mean, he's laying there screaming and thrashing around.
It's a long park. It's a big park.
The guy's just around nearby.
Is this in Central Park?
It's a park. It doesn't say where it is. There's no sign.
Just saying, in Central Park lately, there have been a lot of Pokemon. It's like, what's very similar to a lot of the goings on.
Yeah.
In Central Park lately, where they're all capturing Rattatas and such.
Yeah.
But in the oldie days, it would just be a bunch of rats eating you alive.
People capturing Frittatas. It's a lot different then. What was really good about that film was the soundtrack. It was by Keith Emerson, who was an Emerson, Lake and Palmer. I'm sure you know a couple of songs by them. But so it was just this really loud score that would just like come crashing into the movie at points. And it was really quite good. And that kind of made the film more watchable.
I got to give, I always got to give a little shout out to the Rio for interesting, weird movies.
I'm glad
that
they did
that.
It's kind
of the nice little weird movie house.
And there wasn't a lot of people there for it. And I was sorry for that. But I went last night to see Alexandro Jodorowsky's The Holy Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And it was packed. And I was surprised how packed it was. And
they pushed that pretty hard.
And not packed full of old people like me. Packed full of young people. So I don't know if they're like fans of that Dune documentary, if they saw that maybe, and that made them interested in his film.
They did show that there, yeah.
And it was, you know, the film is great. It's crazy fun, but it was good.
Nice.
And then the last thing that I went to see off on a whim was the Riff Tracks did a 30th MSTK.
MSTK
3K. Yeah, I'm sorry that you didn't know about it.
I didn't know about it, no.
Maybe I should have told you. I'm sorry.
Walking distance from my house.
And no, hardly anyone there because, once again, they did not
what?
Promote it.
That drives me nuts.
So,
it drives me nuts.
It was so sad because I felt like, well, this was so hilarious.
Ugh.
And no one, you know, they're probably going to be like, oh, I'm not going to do that again because no one came for it. But the thing was, even I went to see it. We get there at 6:30. It's a 7 o'clock show.
Yeah.
We walk across the street. There's no signs telling you it's on. There's no signs telling you that there's a theater there. You only know there's a theater there because of the sign above it. Apparently, someone else was there and they go, they don't really open until 7:15. Like for a 7 o'clock show, you open at 7:15?
That was my same thing
last
night.
That's dumb.
Yeah, we did the same thing.
That's dumb.
Yeah, it's completely dumb.
You know, open up, tell people you're there.
We went to see the Nice Guys. And
good movie,
it
hey?
Was like, really good movie. I really enjoyed it. But it was like, no real markings on the signs to say that they're on or what's going on. It was just all confusing. And then you go in and you got to buy your tickets from the concession, but they don't take cash right now. And we've got to wait for the manager and all this. It was just all a big mess. It was fun when I saw the film, but you're right. Annoying.
Come on, do it right. I mean, they're obviously trying to follow like a Rio type model of showing like old films and new films and whatnot, which is great. I love the idea of movies theaters doing that. When I went to see Inferno, I was like, I would love a theater like this near where I lived, which is impossible, but I would love to live near a theater like this. It obviously wouldn't work in Aldergrove because it would just be me going to the movies. But it would be great, or maybe one other person going to the movies. But it would be great to live near a theater like that where you could just walk over and they're like, you look in the paper and go, oh, they're playing Boogie Nights.
So what film did they riff on?
Well, they did all shorts.
Oh, it was all shorts.
And ones I'd never seen before. Maybe one you've seen, Shake Hands with Danger. Have you seen that one? Bow, bow,
bow, bow. You're being sarcastic now, of course.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, you saw it. I've done it.
I've never seen you do it.
Oh.
I saw you do one, but it was a different... The one that you did...
It's Shake Hands with Danger. That's the one I did where we dub over the thing, yeah.
But it was a different film.
Shake Hands with Danger. Now they call him Three-Fingered Joe. Is that the one?
Yeah, but I don't remember that one.
Yeah, that's what we did.
Because the one that I saw, it was like a lot of weird accidents in a warehouse.
That's Shake Hands with Danger.
With a lot of boxes and stuff falling. This one was Caterpillar Tractors.
No. That's a separate thing. That's a separate thing.
That's the one I saw. I didn't see Shake Hands with Danger.
You have not seen us do Shake Hands with Danger.
No, I never have.
That was one we've done many times.
Okay, yeah. See, I didn't
we
see
did
that
a, sorry, just to explain. We did a dubbing thing where we would do the voices, not like play the video with the actual people talking and music. We just like cut the sound and we just make it all up ourselves.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. But I didn't see you do that one. I saw you do a different one.
Oh, yeah. Shake Hands with Danger has some gory ass.
That's one scene I had to look away from. But okay, so it was kind of like this is how it worked. The show opened. They're in Minneapolis, home of MST3K. Yep. And so it's just the three normal Riff Tracks guy, Bill Corbett, Mike Nelson, and Kevin Murphy.
Yeah.
And so they did one called The Talking Car.
Yes.
Very funny.
Yep. Creepy
talking cars. Not just one, several.
Kind of dream sequence.
Yeah. Really strange. So that was fun. Then they brought out Mary Jo Pell.
Yep.
Who played
Pearl.
Pearl Forster. And then a woman who was married to Mike Nelson now. Bridget Nelson.
Yep.
Who used to write on the show.
And she played a couple of little
Yeah, she did little bits. Like she played that musical guy.
She'd appear in the little window every so often and be like the nagging wife or something.
That's right. And so they did a great little riff on a woman who wants a new kitchen. And her friend come up with a plan to torment her husband, who is amusingly played by a very young Darren McGavin. So you got to have some cleric Darren McGavin yelling at his son for turning on the hot water when he's trying to do the dishes and stuff like that. Because he doesn't have a proper hot water tank that can handle that kind of use, you know, that kind of stuff, right? And so that was pretty good. And then Trace Bouleau, who played Crow,
and
TV's
Dr.
Frank.
Dr. Forrester.
Dr. Forrester, that's right. And TV's Frank, Frank Conniff, come out. Yep. And they did a fun one, which was this crazy one. It was called A Date for Kay. And it was like this girl who was like upset that she didn't have any boys to go out with that night, just her friends. And she just says, I'm not going out. That's no fun. Just hanging around with the girls as usual. And then her sister's there and she's like, well, my babysitter, Kay, she knows a lot of tricks. And so she's telling all these tricks that this girl has. And they're like the most predatory, weird tricks. This feels like she spends all her time conniving to find ways to get guys to talk to her. And she was weird looking. Like she had the weirdest haircut, like this kind of weird, like really high straight fringe, like cut along the top of her hairline. And it's kind of weird looking. And then she's all like with boys. She's like, oh, what are you reading? You know, some guy walked.
Sorry, what did you think that,
what
that,
think was, that
folks?
Was? That was
do you think
that
was a fire truck? A police car? An ambulance? Biohazard? What was it, David?
It was a paramedic.
It was a paramedic?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So if you said paramedic.
First responder.
Then eat a candy necklace.
Whoa, wow. I have to go buy one, obviously. Not many people have them sitting around
my
house.
Maybe look in your old Halloween bag. Maybe you still got one at the bottom of it.
It's still good, even if it's from 4 years ago.
Yep.
And then, like this girl is just like her brother has a friend over. She's like, hey, guys, you want a sandwich? I'll make you guys a sandwich. She makes, and she goes off.
A sex sandwich.
His friend is like, hey, is that your sister? She makes sandwiches? It's just stuff like that, right? Like, it's so weird. Like, but they had a lot of fun with it. And then they had Joel Hodgson and a new guy, Jonah Ray, who's doing the new thing. They came out in a promotional appearance. And they did one about barbers. And that was one of those ones where you're watching people, like it's barbers and beauticians. Two B's. And it's one of those ones where you're watching and even I were like looking at each other in horror because every woman went in looking really great and came out with the worst haircut you've ever seen. Every time. It's like, it was already a good haircut. You really didn't need to go and get a haircut. So then the people who are doing the haircuts are like, I guess we'll make it shorter? I guess? And so every haircut is like inappropriately short and not very nice. Ugh. Anyway, so that was good. And then there was one more with the three guys. They did the Shake Hands with Danger.
Yeah.
And then they did two last ones with everyone. They had everyone come out on stage.
Nice.
They did a Superman with the original. It was a Superman.
Fleischer?
No, not Fleischer.
The cereal?
The cereal. No, not the cereal. The TV show. But this was one about buying government stamps as a way to buy treasury bonds. And so it was like a little short that would have been showed in theaters promoting.
Oh, okay.
And so it had, you know, the George Reeves and the lady who played Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen and the choleric. I've used choleric twice today, but I like that word. Perry White.
I wish I could remember Lois Lane's name. She just passed away recently. Very sweet woman.
Yeah. I don't know. Sorry.
We know who she was. She was in the serials and she was also in the TV show.
Was it also Kay something? No, I'm not sure. I don't want to say that. I don't want to say that because now it's put us off on our wild goose chase. I'm sorry. They did that one, and then they finished with the most hilarious, crazy, insane 1970s weird short called Grasses. And it starts off talking about different types of grass.
Yeah.
And what is grass?
Yeah.
And is corn grass?
Okay.
Corn is grass. I never occurred to me before, but when I was thinking about it, I thought, yeah, corn is grass. I never thought about it, but corn is just like giant grass, right?
Okay.
But when you think of grass in the field, when it grows high,
sure,
and then it has like the seed part on top, corn's the same. It has leaves that wrap around the stalk. The stalk is breakable in several places.
Sure.
And then it has the seed pod at the very top of it. It's really interesting. But then it has kids doing like art projects with grass, and it's like you're watching The Wicker Man. It's like they're getting ready to burn Edward Woodward. You know, like they're just, they're like making these masks. They're like putting glue on these masks and like then sticking a bunch of grass to it, and then the kids are putting them on. You're like, this is getting really creepy. And then they make these weird little like ceramic faces with these big giant mouths, and then they stick all this grass in it, like it's beards and stuff sticking out of it, and you're, this is really creepy. So creepy. And then they're like plaiting grass and braiding it and making like headbands and stuff. It's like, these kids are ill. Like, this is terrible. Like, you just feel like it's going to cut to a scene and they're like dancing around a person tied to a pole. Like, it was, this felt like that. It was so weird, but very funny. And then that was the end of it. It was really good.
I hope it comes out on something sometime in some way.
They said there will be a DVD of it.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
it's well worth seeing. Terrible about that.
It's well worth seeing.
Okay.
I'm glad I saw it live.
In
your face.
Yep. And that's how we end every episode, with in your face. Folks, if you disagree with any of the movie reviews we've done on today's show, why not let us know? And if you've got any questions about movies or anything, we are looking for questions for our question episode, which is episode 250. We are offering prizes for randomly selected questions.
I made a prize.
Dave made a prize out of corn, which, as you know, is also grass.
It's also
He's
grass.
Wearing a mask right now, and it's very creepy.
Very creepy. I'll be sacrificing Ian later to the god of...
He's asked me to slip into a Jiffy Pop bag. going into the microwave.
No, I put together a little collection called The Bumper Book of Worso Jar. It has all their Worso Jar comics in it that are understandable isolated. So I had to leave out one of the stories because it was a two-parter that... The border one, so it didn't really make sense on its own.
Okay.
So I put together all the stories that you and I drew and wrote together. So that will be one of our giveaways to anyone who asks questions. They will receive that as part of our...
Good. So that's worth your while. And thank you, everybody, who has been writing in questions. They've been good. They're really good. All right. So here's how you contact us. The easiest way... No, it's not the easiest way. It's one of the many ways.
Okay.
Is go to sneakydragon.com. That is our webpage. Mm-hmm. And after every episode, there's a spot there. You can just like say what you thought of the episode or... ask a question.
Yep.
That's one way to go. If you want to email, we're at sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. Now I'm going to sneeze. There we go.
sneakydragon@sneakydragon.com.
I've only sneezed twice on the show in the entire run of the show.
How do you know that?
Because it's weird to sneeze during a podcast.
Okay, you're right.
Anyway, sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. What?
Do you want me to cut it out?
No. It makes me seem more human and less. It makes the Blade Runner not come after me.
You're less like Holtzman.
Yeah. Oh, I like Holtzman so much. sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. If you want to go to Twitter, that is @sneaky_dragon. We also have a Tumblr, sneakydragon.tumblr.com. That's how that works, right?
I don't know.
I think that's how that goes.
Sure. If you're on Tumblr, look for Sneaky Dragon
you
and follow us there.
You generally know how to do things right. You know how things work internet-wise.
Yep.
Or if you see us on the street, hand us a piece of paper.
That's another way to do it?
That also works.
Sure.
Yeah. Occasionally, I've had a lot of people actually coming up to me from random things lately and me not recognizing them. And then the person telling me, oh, we've never actually met before, but they know me from this or another thing.
Ah, nice.
And it's just like, lead with that.
Yeah.
Lead with, hey, we haven't met,
yeah.
but like, and don't lead with, hey, good to see you. All right, because that means we've know each other, right? Yeah. Otherwise, I'm just Rolodexing, and I'm doing the, hey, and I'm stalling for time and hoping that I can get off the bus soon. But it's always sweet when you say hi and you like the show or something else. That's always very, very nice.
Sure. Okay. Sure.
So anything else, Mr. Dedrick, before we wrap up?
No, I'm spent.
All right. Good and good. I'm sorry you're spent because we're going to do another episode almost directly after this. That's the way we do things now. Next week on the show, we have a special guest. Who will it be? We're not telling you. Tune in. You'll see. It's a special guest, though. It'll be a lot of fun. Okay. I've been Ian.
I've been David.
And who are you going to call? Not us, because this isn't a phone-in show.
Goat Butters.
Butter makes you feel good.
Good stuff. Okay, let's record this.